Cactus Radio, FM 104.6, bringing the island's community together.
The general election 2024 takes place on the 4th of July, and Vectis Radio has reached out to all parliamentary candidates in both constituencies. Today's parliamentary candidate is
Nick Shewitt from the Liberal Democrats. So welcome, Nick. How are you?
Very well, thank you, and nice to be joining you.
Well, it is, because last week we tried, but it was a bit chaotic out there, because it always is on the Wednesday before the festival.
It was an interesting day, I have to be honest.
Now, but there we go. Look, you get 25 minutes, like everyone else here, and we wanted to have these moments with the parliamentary candidates. All six in the West are coming in on the mid-morning show, and we got others booked in for the rest of the week. And it's not a hustings, it's not a bun fight, it's just, okay, let's find out if Nick gets elected, what's he going to do for the Isle of Wight? So, first of all, I've got one question to start off with, and it's a simple, basic question. Party or people?
People.
Good.
The whole... we can expand on that, but the bottom line is that's the reason why I'm a Liberal Democrat, because it enables me to flourish as... to do what I want to do, which is actually help people, which is, I've always been doing public service of one sort or another, and this is just an extension of what I've done before.
Okay, so we'll find out in the next 20 minutes or so. So, I mean, what do you want to take first? Because there's lots of things, and I find that most politicians, they push the most important stuff, the ones that everyone's talking about at the moment. I mean, we could start with the ferry, we could start with military road. Where do you want to go? What's the first topic?
Okay, let's... If I give some background, it always helps, because this is where I start from. I spent 25 odd years in the civil service in a variety of jobs. I ended up looking after science and innovation for UK Trade and Investment, which basically means I went around the world promoting what we do as a country. And what I always wanted as a civil servant is to actually deliver things. And that is really what I'm trying to do as a politician. It's what I've done in 18 months as a councillor so far. I've managed to do several things, which I was quite pleased with. And that's always in conjunction with other people. I only influence people, put people together, join thinking to make things happen. Don't think if anything happens with a military road, it won't be me doing the spade work on the grounds that I'll probably fall over and break a shoulder.
Right. Okay.
Coming back to it, the priority for me, and it came out of a lot of what I was talking about to people, and I was really pleased that some other candidates have picked this up, is ferries. And I was asked, you know, what my priorities were, what top three were recently, and I said ferries, and they said, what the other two? And I said ferries and ferries. And what was good fun was to see that reflected back. When the BBC were here, they were using the same phrase, ferries, ferries, ferries. And ferries really are the thing that really causes us problems on the island, because they act as a trade barrier, as a community barrier, as a health barrier. And if we can do something about them, then we have an opportunity as an island to actually boost ourselves in so many different directions. And last November in council, the full council agreed a motion which I put through with the help of colleagues. And that motion was very simple, that the island needed legislative support. It needed national support to do things. And one of those key things was to control the ferries. So there are three things that you need for the ferries. The first one is regulation by statute, which means regulation of the type of ferries they run, the staffing, the fare levels, and any number of other things, but all related to regulation of ferries. And the second thing they need is a service obligation, so they actually run when we need them. There will always be, you know, quieter periods during the night, for instance, and busier periods when perhaps we have, say, a festival going on. But those things can be covered. And then the final thing actually is support from government, and it's public subsidy. And one of the critical things about that is that you see that everywhere else. You see that in Scotland, it's called road traffic equivalent. You see that in European countries from Denmark all the way down to Greece. And the whole point is that that makes sure that islands are integrated into the greater country. You know, the barrier that the ferries cause is absolutely enormous. And in the mornings, I do, you know, sort of 30-second pieces to camera, and then sometimes I put them out on Facebook. Sometimes they make sense even, but I don't promise always. But one of the things is I remembered 3-4 years ago, I was running my business and I was going across to the mainland to work in Sherborne and Yeovil, and I had to stop it because the cost of the ferries and the actual ferries that they ran meant that I could basically not afford and not be able to get back on time, so I couldn't do it. So that particular side of my business just vanished.
Okay, look, I don't doubt that there's a need to upgrade, improve the ferry system. I don't doubt that, but I also believe that there are a lot of people that shout and make a lot of noise about the ferry, and it's probably bigger than we actually... The issue is not as big as what we think, is because there's a lot of noise. There's an awful lot of people that are not bothered by the ferries that much because they don't use them that often. I mean, I only use them 3-4 times a year, if that. I've never, ever had an issue. And my point is exactly the same as it was last week when I was talking to Cameron Palin, and I've not changed. Surely, if people need to go across to the mainland to have services and go to hospitals and things like that, surely it would be better to work at it the other way, whilst tackling the issues with the ferries, that we can, you know, have some kind of contract that we can work towards that makes things better. But wouldn't it be better to have better services, so we've got a hospital that can cater for those people, so they don't have to go over, you know, with their cancer and go over to the mainland and have their treatments and so on? To me, that makes common sense, and we're going at it the wrong way. If we attack from both sides, you know, let's improve the ferries for people, but let's also improve the services. To me, that's a win-win situation. I'd rather see that than all of a sudden we've got fantastic ferry services, everyone's happy that he's shouting and making a noise, but you've still got to go with your cancer over to the mainland to have treatment. And I think better services here works for me every time.
You're quite right. And I'll expand on that a little bit, because obviously we've got some time, which is always nice. There is absolutely no doubt, and I have put it on public record, that I am concerned about the transfer of medical services from here on the island to the mainland. And it's not just about the sort of simple issue of time travel. It's also that people who are ill often may not want to travel or may not be able to travel, and the ferries make very little allowance for those people. I'm hearing, and I'm sure you've heard the same thing, of horror stories about ferries with lifts that don't work for people who have no other means. They are unable to climb stairs. So coming back to it, yes, it would be good if we could improve services on the island, but actually a lot of it does come back to ferries, because one of the reasons why medical services are so struggling on the island is because they can't get the staff. And part of the reason why they can't get the staff is the fact that the island is not an attractive place to be. So it's trying to put all of these things together so that you've got the economy of the island, you've got health services, you've got the facilities that people want, you've got the community that we do have here, but you also have you know, the sort of creative things that people want to go to, you know, the fair, the concerts, the lectures, you know, all of those things come into it. And when you actually get underneath a lot of it, the ferries cause a major problem, because they're not just a trade barrier, they are a health barrier and they are a community barrier. I mean, you talk of going to the mainland 3-4 times a year. I happen to have children on the mainland now, and my other two have just gone to university, so therefore by definition they are there. It is difficult to maintain a continuing link with families when you have to pay 140 quid as I was quoted the other day, or sure, 240 quid as somebody was quoted. And that's what I'm saying, that barrier needs to be dealt with. And coming back to what I was saying, I always went on the basis of, well, I can only do one thing at a time, and sometimes I can't even manage that, but we won't go there. I don't promise miracles. But if we don't deal with one thing at a time, all of those things, the health service, the economy, things like that, we can deal in tandem, but let's have a clear focus, which is why I said ferries.
Okay. Look, I mean, the way I look at the ferries is I still think that there's a lot of noise from probably, you know, a few, and it's not the majority. I think the majority of people don't probably use the ferries, but the noisy ones are being heard. So we're kowtowing to them to sort of say, hey, look, we've got to make this. And I totally get that if you are using the ferry on a regular basis and it becomes very expensive if you want to go across numerous times, those are the noisy people that we should all be listening to. But I just want to make it apparent that, you know, that I don't think that there's a lot of people that are really, really unhappy because most of us don't use the ferries that often. But hey, I think that's something that we'll all have to agree to disagree on. But I think we can all agree that we need to put something in place that is improving, and it's what those islanders that need it in place over the coming months, years, however long it takes to put in place. I want to talk about housing, because housing is quite a major thing at the moment. People are, you know, in some cases we're building houses in areas that maybe we shouldn't. You know, the people out in the country are saying, not on my backyard, and so on. But just give us your take on the housing side of things, and how can we improve it? Because there's an awful lot of people that are living where they shouldn't, or they've got no place to go, or they're living with parents and they're going to be there forever, so which is not a healthy thing, is it?
No. Housing actually is one of those things that I did prioritise when I first got elected back in November 22, and I raised it as a series of questions and pursued the council about it, and obviously the council aren't the only people dealing with it. And it's to some extent a two-pronged approach that we need. One is to make sure that the housing that is built is appropriate for the island, and the second thing is to make sure that the housing is actually built. We've seen any number of developments taking place where they are not the sort of houses that people on the island really need. That, you know, we need low cost affordable housing, and specifically we need a substantial level of social housing for rental. And we've all seen, you know, the statistics, and actually on the ground we see it as well. People who cannot afford to live anywhere. People who live in caravans. I represent the biggest ward on the island as a councillor. It's 15% of the island. It's 1.5 times the size of the city of Portsmouth. It's enormous, fantastic place. But I know people there who are living in static caravans, who are living in holiday accommodation, who are living in accommodation which is frankly deplorable. Those people need housing. So what I'm talking about is what's the sort of housing that we need for that sort of thing? So it's quite a long story, so interrupt me any time because I go on and on.
Well, look, we've got 12 minutes. All I will say at this point is, okay, I look at the housing thing, and is it as simple as you build a house, somebody makes loads of money out of it? We had all those council houses that we sold off, didn't really replace them, and now we've got the problem that we have, and the problem is still going to carry on, because all that will happen is developers will build a house and they'll want to sell it at X to make a profit. Who can afford that? Probably people coming from the mainland, the people that are homeless, or they don't have, or they're living in the static caravans. They can't afford that.
No.
So how do we get over that issue?
Well, there's a couple of approaches which do work. The first one is that we look for community-led housing. We look for local parish councils, local councils of all sorts, to actually start building small sets of houses. And that's happening over in Yarmouth's direction. It's happening over in Shelfleet. That's one possibility. Otherwise, our rural exceptional housing, again, small-scale housing, which is basically locked down for local people. There is a development which took some place some time ago in Bryston, which is very, very close to where I am, and that is locked down in perpetuity for people with direct local connections.
So we have affordable housing on the island.
We do have some, but we do not have enough.
Mm.
And that is one of the things that we really need to see, whatever colour of the next government is, to actually get a grasp of. And I will say one thing which I'm very happy to stand up for. The island did not have an island, a recent island plan. There is a draft island plan and strategy which has been in preparation for years, and the council staff have worked really, really hard on it, and it just never went through council. I've brought that before my committee. I control a councillor, a scrutiny committee for the council. We put forward 7 recommendations. All of those recommendations were accepted, and eventually me, my colleagues in my party and others, we got the draft island plan strategy, and that actually starts putting teeth into the ability to control what developers build, the type of housing, you know, for in terms of sort of things like energy capture on them and the like. So
when can that be put in place? When can we reap the benefits?
Okay, the moment the draft island plan strategy is passed by council, which it has been back in May the 1st, the council then goes to consultation. The moment that starts coming up, you can it starts having some effect. Not necessarily as much as it will when it finally is got through. It has to go through a planning inspectorate and the like. You can expect it sometime next year to take full effect. But the bottom line is it is already having an effect on what developers will do.
Okay. I want to move on because I know we've got less than 10 minutes now, and believe me, it whistles by. I want to talk about schools and education, and I know you're a former teacher, so you must have a lot of input on how do we need to fix schools and education here on the Isle of Wight? Of course we do.
Of course we do. And I spent 3.5 years in teaching until I finally left on the grounds that I kept falling out with senior leadership. They kept telling me what to do, and quite honestly, telling me what to do is really not a very good idea. But what I did see very firmly is the island issue, which is, or island issues about education, that the people who do well in academic settings will do well in virtually all of the schools on the island. There are some very, very good teachers, and there are some extremely hardworking teachers. I know, I used to work with some of them, and I don't claim to be as good as most of them. Then you have 60% of children who remain, they don't go to university, and those 60% are the people who've spent their entire school career being told, well, you're not quite good enough and you're not quite going to get that done, and you're only going to get your 4 or 5 GCSEs or maybe not even that. So what I'm really worried about is how do we make sure that those people, through colleges, through outside careers guidance, through links to firms on the island, how can we help them realise their potential? Because just because you're not academic doesn't mean you're incapable. And I keep talking to kids and trying to build up their confidence, because they have skills, they do things, they will be able to do things that I can't even dream about. If you want a decorator and you put me in your house, I'd probably blow it up. You want people who can actually do it and walk out and look at something which is a lot better.
Right. So, I mean, have we got something that's in place that is not fit for purpose? It needs modernisation, it needs looking at, because, you know, I said last week, same thing, we've got young people that are into YouTubing, they're into gaming, they're into making films. There's not that much encouragement within the school curriculum that can help them, and yet that is a career path. And yet, you
absolutely
go back 30 years, it was different. And not a lot has changed in that period of time. So we need to modernise it. I mean, if it was me and I was sat where you are, I'd be saying, Ian, I'm going to chuck it all up in the air and we're going to pick out all the best bits, we're going to put that in, and then we're going to discard all the bits that don't work.
Yeah. I'm not somebody who says you have to throw things away, because you have to start from here and you have to start from the skill set we have. We went through some years ago a change from a 3-tier to a 2-tier school system. And it was done at speed without taking account of the key resource that you have, which is the teachers. And it messed our school systems up for years. So don't try and change it all at once. Look at what we've got and try and improve it. But yeah, utterly. I mean, I've been shouting and screaming about the creative industries and about the opportunities that they can give to kids. It is, if you have somebody who is creative, support them. If they have another skill, support them. And that's why I say with schools, let's start with the simple stuff, which is actually decent careers of guidance, decent reach out to industry, decent links to different small companies, because the island has an enormous number of small companies, some of them immensely innovative and capable. Well, we need to build that into the school system as best we can.
Okay, look, I want to move on to green stuff. And there's a lady that comes in on a regular basis. She says that none of the parties, and she knows her stuff. She's a green lady. She's doing lots of stuff in the environment and so on. And she's saying none of the parties, absolutely not even the Greens, are doing enough to cut down on emissions. And she's very concerned that come 2050, the Isle of Wight might be split into two because of what's going to happen.
Okay, well, we talked briefly before, and you will know that I have a background as a scientist. I started as a botanist and geologist at university. I've parlayed that into, as I said, the head of science innovation within UK Trade Investment in central government, and I also taught science for a period of time. So it's safe to say that I have a background and understand it. So there are three key things. If you're going to talk about that sort of thing, it's pollution, its resources, its biodiversity. And the pollution includes climate change. You can't put climate change to one side and say that's the only thing. The biodiversity, we are the most nature-depleted country in the world.
Wow.
You know, and you look at those things and then you look at what is stopping us improving. So, again, I come back to what have I done? As a councillor, one of the things that I pushed through was to protect a buffer zone to ancient woodlands and increase it from 15 to 50 metres. That doesn't sound very much, but it massively increases that particular ecosystem. So some of the work that I have done is in the draft island plan strategy and will have an effect for the next 15, 20 years. Now, I'm not the only person driving this. And yes, we are not moving fast enough, but we have to move at the speed that we can. This current government has basically thrown it all away, I'm afraid, and you know, they turn around and go, well, we can still pump oil and gas out and it doesn't really matter. That simply isn't the case.
OK, look, I want to try and tackle dentists and improve GPs access as well. So how are you going to do that? Because I know that my wife's been waiting for a dentist for years.
The island has become a dental desert. And there are two key things. One is that we don't attract enough dentists here. And two, because the actual system itself, the payment method just is simply not fit for purpose. So we would have to change that system to actually make sure that it's worthwhile for dentists to get in. And we also need to actually tackle the people who are dentists who can't get into the system because there are too many hurdles in the way. And I'm aware of a dentist who's trying to come back after maternity leave and just simply cannot get in because of these problems with funding and the like. So there are people who want to do it, but it's a question of making sure the system, and that's where the policymakers like myself come in. We need to set the policy to make it possible. And GPs, you'll have seen the headline, Liberal Democrat, we want 8,000 more GPs, and that's retention and that's recruitment. So there are two ways of actually getting hold of GPs. And it's also making sure that GPs feel valued and feel able to give people the time they need.
Okay, public services, very quickly, because I say we've got less than 3 minutes, and I know that I want you to round up why we should vote for you. So public services, I know we touched on, you know, the ferries, so we don't need to do that, but what do you think? I mean, when it comes down to our electric, our water, what would you do with that lot? Because that's, I don't have much money because of it. Yeah. You know, water's gone up, electric's gone up, gas has gone up, it's colossal.
I face exactly the same problem in my ancient cottage, I'm afraid, the hobbit hole, as we call it. A bit unfair on hobbits, unfortunately. But coming back to it, yeah, the regulation of those organisations is critical. And if you have what the current government has done, which is basically go to the regulator, we're going to cut your staff and we're not going to label you to actually grab hold of those companies. Guess what? Those private companies will run away with it. So the water companies have run away with over £70 billion over the years since they were privatised. And funnily enough, because they've been funneling out water, to go along with that, they're funneling out sewage into our rivers and seas. So it's a question of actually, again, comes back to the policy makers, setting the regulations so those companies are controlled and actually making sure that those people are controlled properly. So bonuses are cut for water executives and they are fined if they release sewage.
Okay, look, you can hear the clock ticking.
I can hear the clock ticking.
You've got about 40 seconds to tell us why we should vote for Nick Stewart at the general election on July the 4th in the west of the island.
Okay, For me, I want to do things for people on the island. I want to do it here and nationally. And I have a record of achievement in 18 months as a councillor. And I would set that against any of the other candidates.
You still got a bit of time.
Oh,
not much.
Can I have another hour? The bottom line is I want to hear from people. You talked about ferries. I would say a lot of people I talk to, and a lot of people, it's not just the Lao people, it's everybody that I talk to has a ferry horror story. So we need to deal with them first of all.
Your local station. We are your Vectis Radio. FM 104.6 and online at vectisradio.com.